It worked. I'm very thankful. About a month ago, I sent out a request by email seeking if you guys have any sermon suggestions you wanted to me to discuss. And Cassandra has probably asked me 100 times, excuse me, to talk about how to avoid gossip. I've just been bad and not done it. But I guess after 100 times, I listen. So we're going to be talking about gossip this morning. We are not going to be gossiping. We're going to be discussing how to avoid gossip. And we want to spend a little bit of time in the beginning discussing what gossip actually is. If I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time. If you want more discussion about what is and isn't gossip, we can have another sermon. But we have to at least have a basic idea of what something is in order to be able to avoid it. Something that I came across and learned as I was preparing this lesson was how similar and directly tied together gossip and slander are. So as we're discussing gossip, slander is going to come out. In fact, as we're reading and going through the scriptures together, many of you use different translations than I do, and that's a good thing. And something you're going to see, when I have a passage from the ESV up on the screen and it says gossip, yours very well might say slanderer. I might have a passage that says whisperer, and yours says gossip. Both in the Greek and Hebrew, oftentimes, there are words, the words for gossip and slander are often interchangeable. We're going to also see that in the English. And I'm bringing that out in the English definitions. I'm bringing that out to say this. When I used to think about gossip, I would view it as something that wasn't good, but like it's just something you kind of accidentally do when you're talking too much, too late at night, and you lose yourself a bit. But slander, that's what like politicians do to each other. Well, the fact of the matter is, we probably do both a whole lot more than what we realize. So, according to Oxford's dictionary, according to their definitions, to slander is the action or crime of making a false spoken statement damaging to a person's reputation. And as you would imagine, to slander as a verb is to make false and damaging statements about someone. Now, look at their definition for gossip. According to Oxford, they say gossip is casual or unconstrained conversation or reports about other people, typically involving details that are not confirmed as being true. That sounds kind of similar to slander, doesn't it? Slander, the action of making a false spoken statement damaging to a person's reputation. Gossip, casual or unconstrained conversations or reports about other people, typically involving details that are not confirmed as being true. That's pretty similar. Can you see how just from a little bit of gossip, you can easily get into some slander? In Merriam-Webster's definitions, they have multiple. I brought out two, I think the two that apply to what we're speaking about. The first one is a person who habitually reveals personal or sensational facts about others. Right, that old lady across the street who says she knows or thinks she knows everything about everyone, and she wants to tell everybody everything about everyone, including you. That's a gossip. According to the other definition they give, gossip is a rumor or report of an intimate nature, aka talking about something that is none of your business. And then the verb to gossip is to relay gossip, and they have see definition 2A, a rumor or report of an intimate nature. I appreciate this definition because it shows a little bit of a distinction between talking about something that's none of your business and perhaps discussing something that's in the public forum. For example, the things I'm going to say this morning, I am inserting into the public discussion. If people disagree with me and talk about it, I shouldn't be surprised. I am volunteering my thoughts knowingly into public discussion. So if we do that, we should not be surprised that the public discusses it. I don't think that is gossip whatsoever. Now, it can become gossip. So for example, if a woman comes up or a man comes up and announces that him and his wife are pregnant, and then I go around saying, I think she's pregnant by another man, yeah, I'm talking about a public statement, but I'm inserting details that are not confirmed as being true. I have just gossiped. When I start taking a public thing and inserting my speculation and my fantasies or whatever weird stuff I have, that is gossip and slander. I think another case where public discussion can become slander or gossip is if somebody inserts something into public discussion and then later recants it and repents, and they also do so publicly. If I only bring up the stuff that makes them look bad and ignore the other public things that directly go against that previous report, that's at the very least dishonest, but it's also slander. So I think in general, things discussed publicly can be discussed publicly, but there are exceptions where we can turn such things into gossip and slander. And we're going to talk about another later on. So in Proverbs 16, verse 28, this is an example where, depending on what translation you're using, it might say something other than whisper, gossip, or slander. You can stay in Romans 1. You can stay there. But I'm just bringing this out as a final way to help us see gossip. It says, a dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends. Now, once again, that probably says gossip or slander, or depending on your translation. But it's important to recognize when you look at the Proverbs and Solomon says something, he often says it in prose of two. This person does this and that person does that. They're either things that contrast or go together. This is an example of something that goes together. He's not just talking about dishonest people and gossip separately. He's relating the two ideas together. People who are dishonest spread strife, just like whisperers separate close friends. We will see, as we talk about gossip and slander, dishonesty, strife, and gossip together. We're going to see that in Romans 1. We'll see that. We'll also see that in other scriptures. So as we're thinking about, okay, what is gossip? It is often found and done in times of strife because of a heart full of strife to create strife. You know what? I completely lost my notes. I'm doing this all off the hip. Whoops. Sorry. I just realized that. Anyway, gossip creates strife. It's done for the purpose of strife. While on the other hand, there are times when I think you can go and talk about something else, even something private, for the sake of creating unity. Thank you, Troy. I'm a mess this morning. And I guess since it's public, you can talk about it. So in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 11, Phoebe and her people have written to Paul, and they talk about all the bad things that the Corinthians are doing. I don't think they're gossiping here. I think what they're doing is seeking help so they can create unity. What happens? Does Paul go around saying, man, did you hear what the Corinthians did? No. He takes the information and acts on it so they might have reconciliation with God and with each other. So I think there's also a distinction between gossip and seeking help and what they lead to. Gossip leads to people being angry, upset with each other, or you just looking at somebody with lower esteem. The purpose of seeking help and the results of it should be people coming back together and growth. So in Romans chapter 1, verse 28, our technical first scripture for this morning. We look at what Paul writes about. We look at when Paul is writing about people who do not acknowledge God, who are not pleasing to him, and who are worthy of death. And we look at what's going on in their hearts and what is coming out in their actions. And whenever I look at this list, it's never what I would write as this list, which is an interesting thing. But we're going to see gossip and slander here and where these things come from. Romans 1, 28 through 32. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. Now look at the first two things Paul says these people are. These are gossips. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God. Look at those first three things. Would you normally group those first three things together? When you think haters of God, do you think gossips and slanderers? Maybe slanderers, but gossips? I would maybe say murderers, rapists, politicians, lawyers. They put gossips and slanderers. That ought to change how we think about gossips, how we think about gossiping. He goes on to say, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them. Romans chapter 1 makes it super crystal clear, in case you were wondering. Gossiping, slandering, that's a sin. It's not just a no-no thing. It is a sin that people do who reject God. It is not acceptable. I'm assuming that's why Cassandra asked for strategies about how to avoid it, because it gets us in trouble with God. When you look at verse 29 and you look at the things that gossips and slanderers are filled with, there's just a couple things I want to point out from there. You see envy. I'm not reading these in any order. Malice, maliciousness, deceit, strife, and murder. The times in my life where I'm tempted to gossip and gossip the most are when people hurt me. So in periods of strife, when I have malice towards them, I'm mad at them, and also when I'm jealous of them. You know, gossiping is often stereotypically assigned to women. But when I was working at the cabinet shop, I worked with some real rough and tumble men. And they were some of the biggest gossips I've ever known. And often, it was because somebody was jealous of somebody else because somebody got a new car, so everybody was talking about how it was probably way more than what they could afford, or somebody got a promotion that somebody else wanted. Jealousy is a huge root of gossip. And you see the same thing in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 20. The situation in Corinth was so bad that Paul didn't want to visit them because of how much of a mess it was. And what he was afraid of, well, I'll just read it in 2 Corinthians 12, verse 20. Paul says, "For I fear that perhaps when I come, I may find you not as I wish, and that you may find me not as you wish, that perhaps there may be quarreling, jealousy, anger, hostility, slander, gossip, conceit, and disorder." You see a lot of those same ideas from Romans 1:29 here in 2 Corinthians 12:20. These ideas are tied together. So, okay, what's our first step in avoiding gossip? We need to repent of these horrible attitudes. We need to learn to forgive. We are all going to get hurt. It'd be nice to say avoid getting hurt, but that's not going to happen. But when you get hurt, instead of maliciousness, replace it with love. We need to learn to be content. You are going to not receive everything you want. And I'll tell you this, this is a secret. You're not going to even get everything you deserve. And that's sometimes a very good thing. So when that happens, guess what you need to do? You need to be content. You can't be jealous. Now, I'm not saying if you master contentment and you master forgiveness, you'll never gossip. But man, will it knock the wind out of the sails. At least that's what it did for me. So that's step one. Repenting of horrible attitudes. Learn to resolve conflict. But also, you know what Paul did in 2 Corinthians 12:20 to avoid gossip and slander? When he knew there was an environment that was filled with strife, anger, and jealousy, he stayed away. Paul... Isn't that crazy? A church having so many problems, an apostle says, I'm going to wait to visit them. That's the situation in Corinth. You know, there are times where we need to just avoid environments that are like that. Proverbs chapter 26, verse 20 says, For lack of wood, the fire goes out, and when there is no whisperer, quarreling ceases. So I think the most immediate application is if there's somebody who I spend time with and I often find myself gossiping when I'm with them, I need to learn to set boundaries and say, hey, look, I want to be your friend, but we just cannot, not say I don't want to do this, we cannot do this anymore. And if they refuse to respect that boundary, we need to be like Paul and stay away. But also, there are environments that are that can lead to gossip. If you work in a workplace where you think the only way to get ahead is by undermining, lying about, and gossiping about your coworkers, you either need to learn to be content with being trampled on or find a new job. It is unacceptable to gossip to try to get ahead. If you're part of a community organization whose favorite thing to do is gossip about the community, you really need to find a new hobby. We need to not participate in those sinful activities. Paul wouldn't even go to a church because of that. Maybe what I'm saying is pretty strict, but it's what Paul did. Is it strict or is it extreme, or do we just have low standards about gossip? I'm not saying that we need to just avoid conflict, and by avoiding conflict, we will suddenly never have gossip anymore. In fact, I think avoidance of conflict leads to gossip. In Proverbs chapter 10, verse 18, Solomon writes, "The one who conceals hatred has lying lips, and whoever utters slander is a fool." Something that leads to a lot of gossip, especially among brethren, is when somebody hurts us, instead of going and talking to them and resolving it, we lie about it. When I say lie about it, I don't mean we go around telling lies. What I mean is we lie to ourselves and pretend to that person like everything's okay. But we secretly despise them, hate them. And you know, it's really hard to bottle those things up forever. They eventually come out. So the person who has lying lips, who conceals hatred, they become fools, and then they go and utter slander. You know a really good way to keep yourself from being a fool? Resolve conflicts. If you have a personal problem with somebody, you don't need to tell everybody else. Maybe you might need to seek advice from a wise person, so then you can go talk to them. But resolve the conflicts in your life. It's really hard, or at least for me at least, I'm not very tempted to gossip and slander people who I am at peace with, whom I love and have a good relationship with. I might try to pretend I have a good relationship with them, but the fact is I can't run from reality. If I hate them, something needs to change. Something needs to be fixed. And this is not just general wisdom. I think this is what Jesus tells us to do. Read with me in Matthew chapter 18, 15 through 17. Now, let me know if I'm reading this right. If your brother sins against you, just keep it to yourself and stew on it. Is that what it says? Nobody's shaking their head one way or another. I'll read it again. Let me know if it's right. If your brother sins against you, keep it to yourself and stew on it. Is that what it says? No. Jesus says, if your brother sins against you, tell everybody else, not him. No. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have gained your brother. The purpose of confrontation is so we can gain our brother back. That's the deceit of keeping hatred to yourself. We think if I keep my disgust of them to myself, I'm going to keep the relationship. I might make a facade of a relationship, but if I really want to have my brother, I need to resolve things. I need to go to them. And yes, if they don't listen, take one or two more. And if they refuse to listen, bring it to the church. We don't have to keep everything a secret and in private if resolution isn't working, but we need to have enough love for them and grace to try to deal with it one-on-one first. And once again, there is a time to ask for help. That's what Phoebe and her people did with Corinth. And you know what they did when they asked for help? Paul didn't say, oh, just ignore it. No, they dealt with the issue. And also, I want to say, I think situations like that are the exception and not the rule. There's times where I have sinned and fallen short and not done this right. And often I tell myself, well, it's going to be uncomfortable. They might not listen. It might be awkward. They might get upset. But then I've come to realize, how do I react when somebody comes to me with a problem they have? Do I just immediately agree with them and say, oh yeah, I'm absolutely the bad guy here? Do I always stay calm and never push back? No. How do you respond when somebody comes to you? Are you just immediately going to agree with them? No. It's natural, maybe not right, but it's understandable for people to get defensive. That shouldn't be an excuse we use not to do it. We should just expect that. That's how people work. Listen, here's the thing, especially with our brethren. If we do not trust our brethren here, enough to go speak to them and resolve issues, there's a huge problem going on. Now, maybe the problem is that the church is absolutely horrible. That could be true. I don't think so, but maybe that's true. Or it could be you're a gossip and you're weak and you're a coward. Now, I hope it's neither. But the problem is, if we can't speak to our brethren, there is a problem. I know I've been weak, and I've been a coward, and I know I'm not good getting unscathed out of the sermon, but I need to teach what is true. Something else that I think helps us understand gossip and can help us avoid it is this idea of whispering. As you've seen in a lot of the scriptures I've brought up, Solomon and the gospel writers have used the word whisper. In Psalm 41, verse 7, David says, "All who hate me whisper together about me. They imagine the worst for me." Gossip isn't something we do in the broad daylight with clear integrity for everybody to hear. Why do you think David's enemies were whispering about him? It's because they were afraid for him to hear what they said. They didn't want it to be public. They were trying to keep it to themselves. You don't see gossips and slanderers described as people with high integrity who do things publicly. They're people who go around whispering, manipulating. They're not people who are transparent. We need to speak truth in love. We need to say what is true with true intentions. A practical thing I try to consider is when I'm saying something about somebody else, is this something I am planning to, am willing to, or have said to them already? If I don't ever plan to tell them this, why am I saying it to somebody else? Now, once again, if you're a parent, I know there are times where your kids see something, they ask you about it, and you're going to talk about that person to teach your children something that you might not ever tell that person because they're not ready or whatever. I understand. There's times where we're not going to tell everybody everything. But in general, are we the type of person where we would feel comfortable with other people knowing, in general, what we think about them? Or are we two different people? To them, we're nice, everything's fine. But behind their backs, we are whispering and speculating about all these other things that are none of our business. There's a lot of people who live that way. And that's unacceptable before God. And as much as possible, if I'm going to talk about Mike, these better be things I should be willing to say to Mike's face one day. Maybe not right away, but eventually I should say them. I think perhaps one of the best ways to stay away from gossip is to just be busy with good things. If you turn to 1 Timothy chapter 5, when Paul's giving instructions to Timothy about choosing widows who are worthy of a double honor, he gives very specific requirements for specific reasons. We'll start reading in verse 9. Paul writes, "Let a widow be enrolled if she is not less than 60 years of age, having been the wife of one husband, and having a reputation for good works. If she has brought up children, has shown hospitality, has washed the feet of the saints, has cared for the afflicted, and has devoted herself to every good work. But refuse to enroll younger widows, for when their passions draw them away from Christ, they desire to marry, and so incur condemnation for having abandoned their former faith. Besides that, they learn to be idlers, going about from house to house, and not only idlers, but also gossips and busybodies, saying what they should not. So I would have younger widows marry, bear children, manage their households, and give the adversary no occasion for slander. For some have already strayed after Satan." So when Paul is giving Timothy instructions about picking these worthy widows, the widows he wants are widows who are older, and we'll talk about that next, but who have a record of doing good. When they get the support, they're going to have more time on their hands. And I think there's an expectation to be doing good. And so when you're picking people who are going to have this mission or obligation to do good, he wants people who've had a life of doing good, so they will continue that habit. He doesn't want younger widows who are going to have all this energy. Maybe they don't have this track record of doing good, but they're going to have now a lot of free time. And you know what people do when they have a lot of free time and nothing else better to do? As he points out, they get into idling and gossiping. So we're not talking about this morning how to be worthy widows. Maybe in some ways we are, in the sense that we need to be thinking about ways of doing good. It's really, really, really hard to gossip about what your neighbor is doing while you're studying the Bible with them. It's going to be really hard for me to gossip. Sorry, Mike, I keep on using you. To gossip about Mike if I'm spending time at his house encouraging him. I literally can't do the same both things at once. We need to be busy doing good and have our hearts and minds busy on doing good. I think gossiping and slander is often just a result of worldliness. I'm thinking about worldly things. I'm thinking about petty things. So my language follows. And I get it. No matter what situation we're in, we are going to be tempted to gossip. There's a couple proverbs that are repeated word for word multiple times in the Proverbs. This is one of them. It says, "The words of a whisperer are like delicious morsels. They go down into the inner parts of the body." I think there are going to be times, even when I am doing good, that listening to gossip and participating in gossip is still going to be tempting. I think that's another thing we need to do in order to resist it, is realize how tempting it is. And because of that, since it's so tempting, that's all the more reason to focus my heart and mind in doing good. So when I'm coming to Bible class and Dan's teaching Revelation, on my way into class, I need to be thinking about the homework and wondering, I wonder what Dan's going to teach us this morning. I need to not be wondering about the Bunting's new car and how much they paid for it. That's not what I should have my mind on. Because if my mind is on the Bunting's new car, after Bible class, I need to be talking about Bible class, or I should be, or at least have it on my mind. I need to not go around and say to Jonathan, "Man, I wonder how much the Bunting spent on their new car. You think they're in debt?" That is none of my business. I need to be focused on what Dan is teaching. Also, don't raise your hand. How many of you started wondering if the Bunting's got a new car? You see what I'm saying? It is so tempting to get into that. That's none of our business. I think the even best good thing to do to keep ourselves busy with is, instead of thinking about other people's problems, we need to be focusing on doing our own. Read with me Matthew chapter 7. We're going to read Matthew chapter 7, 1 through 5. Judge not, that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when there is the log in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. I don't know about you guys, but I have enough problems that I don't need to be talking about other people's. I need to be focused on dealing with my own. And it's just not just I need to be doing this instead of that. I think it's just very practical. If I am ushering and working on creating an environment of vulnerability where I'm sharing my sins with others so they help me deal with my sins, and I'm exposing who I am, the last thing I want to do is create an environment of gossiping. If I'm confessing my sins to Jonathan, I do not want to gossip with Jonathan. Because you know what? This isn't in the Bible, but it's true. Those who gossip with you will gossip about you. So I sure do not want to be gossiping with the people I'm confessing to. That is not good. Also, a lot of times when I'm gossiping or other people are gossiping, it's because we just don't want to deal with our problems. We're trying to find a distraction, something else to make us feel good. That's why so many people watch crime movies and stuff like that. Because we might have a bunch of problems, but we get to talk about all these really bad people. Well, we need to turn off the TV and look in the mirror instead and start working on that. Because if you want to feel good about yourself, don't look at other people's junk. You need to look at God's grace if you want to feel good about yourself. Also, Jesus says in Matthew 7, 1 and 2, the judgment we judge will be judged against us. When I'm thinking about my ugliness and my problems and my need for forgiveness, and I'm going and gossiping and slandering, God can hear that and will treat me the same way. What if the speculativeness and the things I'm saying about other people, God said about me? Could I stand before that? He's going to treat us that way. So if we understand God's standards, when we are working on ourselves, it's going to knock the wind out of the sails of gossip. That's also the invitation. We all have problems. That's why it's so easy to gossip, because there's no lack of material to talk about. Instead of talking about each other, why don't we help each other? If you need the help of the congregation, please come forward while we sing the song of invitation.